Thank you.
That was great. So I finally saw that movie yesterday this week. My husband and I watched it. There's this really great movie called Yesterday, right? That's what it's called. And it's about some guy who has an experience and wakes up, and no one has ever heard the music of the Beatles, right? And so, but he knows all of it, and so he brings it forward. So it's really, but it made me think about what this world would be like without the music of the Beatles. So that was a perfect choice, John. Thank you so much. You know, like, I think that it's so much part of the fabric of our culture and has touched so many of us, and it doesn't matter which generation you're in, right? I love it when our teens discover the Beatles and they think it's like their first, you know, and they think it's, oh my God, you know. It just makes me laugh a little bit when our kids found the Beatles in their teen years and how fun it was. So that was a perfect song for us to start today. So we've got a new month and a new theme. This year we are looking at the courage it takes to step into living a full spiritual life, committing to it and being, immersing ourselves in it. And this month we're looking at kindness. And so the courage to be kind. And so to begin, we have to, I resonate with the message of Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science, and his Science of Mind textbook. He says this about 35 or 40 times. We have to start where you are, right? Like, we have to begin where we are. We have to be conscious of what's happening around us for us to be able to move forward. And so let's face it, we're living in a world right now where kindness does not seem to be rewarded. We're living in a time when the opposite seems to be true. We're living in a time when opposite viewpoints are shouting at each other, you know, and no one is listening. We're living in a time where it seems that the opposite of kindness is being rewarded. All right, now I'm saying that it seems that way. Because on the whole, when we look at, I want to remind us constantly that when we have to realize the life that we are living in the world that we're living in right now, we are bombarded with imagery and news and our social media and everything online is giving us a picture of what's happening that doesn't take into effect or into the one-on-one connections that people have. I believe that kindness is alive. I believe that kindness and compassion are all around us, but we are so focused on what does not look like that that sometimes we can't see it. That's my premise on this. And so, but what I also know is that when we connect to the truth of who we are and we make the choice personally in our life to live a kind, compassionate, connected life, then it starts to ripple outward. I think that when we start to realize that we are called to live a certain way, when we look at who we want to be in the world, nobody wants to be the boisterous screaming head, right? That's not our aspiration. I don't want to grow up to be the egomaniacal blah, 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 blah. See, I didn't fill it in. You know, nobody wants to do that. What we want to do is we want to embrace and express ourselves in a way that we want to bring more light into this world. I think that that's the deep call of all of us. What the Dalai Lama talks about in this book is that we have all humans have a desire for happiness and peace of being. That we want to find our place in the world, that each of us is an individual expression of God, which is my word, my way of putting it. We want to find our place and the peace in knowing that we belong to this life. Because so often we listen to that din, to that noise that's happening in the world that tells us we're wrong, that tells us that we're out of place, that tells us that our intentions are going in the wrong direction, and that rewards what I call bad behavior, right? But when we stand in our truth and we create from that place of knowing who we truly are, that's when we become a transformational force for good. And that's what we're here to be, is a transformational force for good. So, it takes courage. It takes courage to stand up for what you know to be right. It takes courage to hold a space of love and understanding, appreciation and respect, even though the majority don't seem to be doing that. It takes courage to stand up and to give compassion and love and forgiveness when we'll be seen as being weak, naive, unrealistic. It takes courage to be who we are in the world. And what I know is that we each have the potential for everything within us. We each have the potential to give the gift of kindness and respect and understanding in the world. And so often I like to give you the end at the beginning, just because I like to do that. So this month we're talking about the courage to be kind. And so the truth is that you have to choose it. You have to choose, stand up and choose to be kind and respectful and compassionate every day. We can't allow the situation of our life to push us off our truth. Again, I'm going to date myself. I grew up, I'm a child of the 70s, so weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. When you were standing in your spiritual truth, you could wobble a little bit. You can get pushed a little. Let's face it, people push our buttons. I've had plenty of buttons pushed, even this week. And we wobble, but you don't fall off your center. You always come back to that place of truth, of knowing who you are. And so we can awaken to how we want to respond to life rather than react to it. So that's where I'm getting to today, but we're going to get there in a minute. So we're going to use some interchangeable words about this month: kindness, compassion, and love. I'm going to interchange all of them because they kind of work together. So the way I see it, love is the presence of God. It's the universal truth. And love reveals itself in a number of ways, and compassion and kindness are two of them. So if each of us is the divine made manifest where we are, God is, then the truth that love is the truth in each and every one of us. And how this comes into being is through us. We can only make the world a better place. We can only create a space for kindness when it comes through us. That's our thoughts and our beliefs and our actions. And it's only through that, in those tiny little minute moments. Again, you know, I'm going to evoke the presence of our baristas, right? When we're dealing with our baristas and the lady or the checkers at the grocery store, even in those tiny little moments, how we deal with them is how we deal with everybody, right? For those moments when we get frustrated and walk through our days and something just gets at us, you know, how are we going to respond to that? How are we going to shine our light forward? That is the only way that we can counteract this loud din of the group consciousness of our culture right now. So let's start with some definitions. Compassion. In simple terms, compassion and love can be defined as positive thoughts and feelings that give rise to such essential things in life as hope, courage, determination, and inner strength. In the Buddhist tradition, compassion and love are seen as two aspects of the same thing. Compassion is the wish for another being to be free from suffering. Love is wanting them to have happiness. Jesus taught that we are called to love our neighbors as ourselves. And not only that, he taught us that we are called to love our enemies. And from the Bible, from Ephesians chapter 4, verses 31 and 32, it teaches, it says, get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as in Christ God forgave you. And so why is this important? And why would we focus on this? Of course we want to be kind. We learned that in kindergarten, right? Why is this important for us to contemplate? Well, our well-being, our ability to fully function in this life depends on this. Because our physical health and our mental well-being are so tied to how we operate and how we relate to life. We are called to realize that the negative thinking and the limited thoughts and the anger and the pain that we put out into the world doesn't hurt the world. I mean, it doesn't help. But it doesn't hurt the world, it hurts us. We are the ones that suffer because we get stuck in those patterns of anger and rage and limitation. Remember last week I said that our baggage doesn't have wheels, you know? Every time we put something into that baggage that we can't let go of, that we can't forgive, that we can't find a new way to relate to, we fill that baggage up. And it's not outside of us, it's inside of us. And so it affects our minds, it affects our way of being, and it affects our physical health. Truth is, our fundamental nature as humans is one of interdependence, right? So the idea is that as a human being, we depend on everybody else around us for our survival. We are not lone entities, right? That lone wolf that thrives on its own. Well, they're packs too, so that doesn't really work, but you know what I mean, right? Follow me? I realize I went down a road that didn't really work. Okay, all right. But we are called to be together in community. There's something about us. It's part of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. One of the core needs that we have in this life is of belonging, of giving and receiving affection, of connecting in this life. We thrive when we work together. We thrive when we are in community. That's why what we do is so important here. That we are building a community of like mind to build each other up. But when we cut ourselves off from that, we pull back, we feel like we're separate, and then, as in the reading, our whole view of life and ourselves shrinks. And what we know in the science of mind is that how we relate to life relates to us. And so if we are living in this shrunken, limited space, there's no possibility for growth and expansion. There's no possibility for evolution. There's no possibility of us being the bright lights that we've come to live, because we think that our life and what's possible for us is tiny. But none of that is true. We've been lying to ourselves for so long. And one of the ways that we can break through that really is just by realizing that as we give, we receive. So what are we giving out to the world? What is that story that we're telling about ourselves? Let us give our light forward. The Dalai Lama shared in his book that he has these, what I love about the Dalai Lama is that he's wanted to bring different groups of people together for these conversations. Like, he pulls in people of different spiritual leaders together of different denominations, and then he pulls all the different philosophers, and he had this set of conversations with a group of psychologists. And what he learned from that was that depression was caused not by a lack of material necessities, right? For so long, we think that happiness and joy will come when we get the stuff, when we can manifest enough stuff, right? For a long time, we think that if we could just manifest a certain amount in our bank account, a certain amount of physical comforts, that we can be at peace and be happy. But what we've learned over the years is that never fills that deep hole. You can't find happiness from the outside in. You can't find fulfillment from the outside in. It has to come from the inside out. And so what he learned from these psychologists is that depression was caused not by a lack of material comfort, but more likely by a difficulty in giving and receiving affection. That we are depressed because we separate ourselves from other people. We separate ourselves from expressing how we feel and then allowing it to come back to us. Often in my classes, we talk about that giving and receiving, right? And we talk about it in all different areas. We talk about it in our financial health, and we talk about it in our relationships, and we talk about it with the world, giving ourselves to the world and allowing the world to support us. And often, I'll tell you, more often than not, what I hear over and over again is, yes, I'd like to give. It's really hard for me to get. It's really hard for me to open to allow someone to help me. It's really hard to allow someone to express their love or appreciation for me. How often does someone give you a compliment and you say, oh, yeah, no. Thanks, this old thing. no, thanks, you know, whatever it is. I hear often people are denying and negating the affection or appreciation that's coming from to them. They may, you make an excuse, we make, I'll put myself in there. Look, I'm going to jump right into the middle of that because I'm guilty of this one too. But it's hard to accept when someone tells you something wonderful about you. You know what? We got to stop that now. We got to throw that out the window. Let that go. You are magnificent. And if somebody sees that and tells you that, you should say, yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. It's kind of you. I mean, we don't have to do the big hair flip. Yeah, you don't have to do that. That's a sermon for another day. But how are we about receiving? Where is our ability to have that flow of giving love in the world and receiving it? So often when everybody goes through a heartbreak. I remember when our older girls were coming up and the first teenage heartbreaks. You know, those tender moments when it looks like it's, you know, they have their first real emotional connection to someone and then it doesn't work out and then the drama of the life, you know, like, oh my God. And so we've all been there. Give me a nod. Yes. Okay. So, but what happens is sometimes for some people is that when that happens, we have a hard time opening our hearts again after that. We have a hard time trusting that if we give our love to someone that we won't get slammed. And that does a huge disservice to us. It takes courage to keep our hearts open after heartbreak, after we lose something that we love in any way, shape, or form. But that's the thing that cuts us off from God. It's the thing that cuts us off from life. We are called to give our love to this world, to give our love to those who we travel with. Instead, so often, it gets closed off, and then we move into that reactive place. I've been hurt, and so I want to hurt someone else, whether we're conscious of that or we're not. There's someone who has moved in my orbit for a number of years who I feel like, I'm going to start by saying it, who's been an angel to me. It's not the easiest relationship I've had, and I've been in, it's 25 years now that I've known this person. And the angel piece of it, the blessing that they've been to me is they've showed me what happens when you are vindictive, when you can't open your heart and allow yourself to give yourself compassion and love and to let somebody else love you. Because this person has been hurt so much that all they know is revenge. All they know is I'm going to feel better when I take them down. And in all different levels, in all different ways. And it's been they've been an angel to me because I can see what kind of life they're building. And I'm holding the space for their heart for 20 years. That there's an awakening. That they don't have to go through the roller coaster of the pain and the difficulty. Thinking that maybe we'll have a little bit of peace or comfort when I give back what I got, right? I think we all know someone like that. I think sometimes we've all been that person. That sometimes we don't know how to react or we don't know how to respond and we feel hurt. Now the truth is stuff happens in our life. There are times when stuff's going to happen to us. And you know what? We are going to have that choice. Remember, that's what you're going to take away from this, is that we have a choice how we are going to act in this world. And so we have a choice whether or not we're going to open to the peace that's possible or whether we're going to move into that place of righteousness, right, and give it back the way we got it. That's the difference between an eye for an eye and Jesus' teaching of forgiveness. And acceptance. And it's up to us to choose it. Now, I'll admit, sometimes stuff happens, and I know I'm right. Okay? I'm right. I know that this has happened, and it pushes my buttons. I'm going to own it. I have a righteousness button, and it's a respect button. Oh, man. When I think I've been not respected, oh, man, don't push that button. oh my goodness. And I know that, and I know now that what happens when that button's pushed, I got to get myself in my prayer chair. I have to have somebody else pray for me. I need to do my work to see the whole perspective before I respond or I react. And I think we all get in a moment where we know that we're right, that we and move into that place of righteousness, and that is the most dangerous place for us to be. Because what that does is it closes us off from understanding that life is there guiding us to a greater expression and a greater experience and a greater understanding of itself, of ourselves, of life, and of God. And so when we allow ourselves to be right and not let that go, it moves into that place that takes us off our center, that not only weebles and wobbles us, it kicks us out the door. But that's not what we were made for, and that never gets us anywhere. We may think that we could have some satisfaction like that person that I know that thinks that they're going to feel peace if they just get back at the person that's hurt them. But how long is that going to last anyways? It's going to last maybe a minute, a moment of satisfaction. And then what are we doing? We know that as we put out something into the world, we get it back. And so when we put out an experience of revenge, what happens is we get a tidal wave of negativity back to us. Then all of those negative emotions are just bombarded on us. As human beings, we all have the potential to be happy and compassionate people, and we also have the potential to be miserable and harmful, and we have to choose it. There's always a potential for good and bad, and it's up to us to consciously identify with who we want to be in the world. Again, it reminds me of the story, and I know I've told it over and over again, and I apologize if you're getting tired of this one, but it fits so perfectly here, and I couldn't find anything else today. But there's a story of the Cherokee grandfather who's talking to his grandson about life, and he tells him, you know, there's two wolves inside of me, and they're fighting. One of them is anger and jealousy and rage and negativity and limitation. And the other one is hope and joy and peace and compassion and love. And the grandson thinks for a minute and he asks him, well, which one's going to win? And the grandfather says, the one I feed. The one I feed. We have that within us. We have the potential to go either way, and we can choose it. And sometimes we do go one way, and we realize that, wait, that didn't really work that well for me. Maybe I should think of a different path. Maybe I should open to being different here. Again, Einstein said you can't solve a problem with the level of consciousness that created it. We need to rise into a new understanding. If there's something that's happening in your world, in your relationships, in your experience of the world, on whatever level that is not working for you, you know what? Something's got to change. And it's not the world's job to change. It's your job to see it differently, to realize maybe I should approach this from a different angle. And my suggestion for today is that we do that through love and compassion, through respect and kindness. Albert Schweitzer said, constant kindness can accomplish much. As the sun makes the ice melt, kindness causes misunderstanding, mistrust, and hostility to evaporate. And another wise one said that we cannot let the situations of the world steal our inner contentment, balance, and peace. That one was me. So I'm going to admit that I had a struggle this week with this talk, and a little bit because, and I couldn't figure it out until I woke up this morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I realized, oh yeah, that's why. This week we had a clear example of this that is part of a complicated, messy situation. And normally, the part of me that wants to make everything so beautiful and light and easy for everybody to get wants to step away from it. But the part of me that knows that the truth has to be spoken into the world that knew that I had to address this. So this week, for those of you who are following, the verdict came down in the Botham Jean murder case in Texas. And this is the case of a woman who was an off-duty police officer, Amber Geiger, who went into an apartment and shot Botham Jean, who was eating ice cream. And she, her excuse was that she thought it was her apartment. And this young man was killed for nothing. And so this is a white woman who shot a black youth. And what happened was that she was sentenced for murder, and she got 10 years, right? Which, and again, I'm kind of tiptoeing through this whole situation because it's very complex and complicated. And so on one hand, there is an uproar in the sentencing of this, and I'm not going to get into the weeds of it and say what's right and what's wrong. I don't know what's right and what's wrong. I'm sitting with the wholeness of this situation. And so here's this woman who's getting, let's face it, a very light sentence for murder. But what happened in the sentencing was that Botham's younger brother, Brant, asked the judge if he could hug her. And he went up to her and he said, "I forgive you." And so spread across the news media this week was this picture of this 19-year-old man hugging this white woman who had killed his brother, okay? And then the judge came down and hugged her and gave her, I think he gave her a Bible and he hugged her. Okay, so this is making such a huge mess in the media these days, and it's so complex and complicated, and so here we have this powerful experience of forgiveness and of kindness and compassion. Right at the core of that this young man was able to do that is huge, and we need to honor that. At the same time, we need to hold the fact that this doesn't mean that the kindness and compassion is happening all over, and we've fixed the race issue, the systemic racism issue that we've got in this country, because that's not true either. And so where we are with this is it's a complex, complicated situation. And there's people who are screaming for justice on one side, and there's people who are saying, but look at the grace that showed up on the other side. And both of them have to be true. And so where I sat with it, and when I woke up at 4 o'clock this morning and realized was that this is not the answer, this is the beginning. What we believe in Science of Mind is something called a mental equivalent. Ernest Holmes talks about the mental equivalence, okay? And so what that is it's a concept, and Thomas Troward calls it a spiritual prototype. So it's a concept of something that happens in mind, in spirit, before it comes into form. And we can't manifest or demonstrate anything in this life without a matching mental equivalent. Follow me? That's my teaching for the day. So what this means is this, is that we can't have forgiveness as the norm. We can't have acceptance and understanding. We can't move forward without the mental equivalent of what's possible, right? Okay, so what I think is that this is not the answer. This is not the moment where we can say, look, we overcame the racist thing. There we go. Everybody's forgiving. That's great. That's not the answer to this. What this is it's a seed of possibility that is finally being planted in what's possible. Now, what I know is this, is that judge who, you know, of course I'm thinking, if these roles were reversed and it was a black man walking into a white woman's apartment, would she be going down and hugging that guy? I don't know. But what I know is that judge that came down and hugged that woman today, every time she sentences someone, she's going to remember that she did what she did. And that's planting a seed of possibility. That every time someone has an experience where they've been wronged and they've been hurt in such a major way, that they will remember this young man who was brave enough to stand up against what everybody else is saying and forgive someone. That's the seed of a mental equivalent. That's a seed of possibility. And so right now, when we are looking for some ray of hope in this world, that something else is being born out of this mess that we feel like we're in right now, I feel like this is the gift. That's why I couldn't not talk about this today. That's why I couldn't not address it, because not because it's the answer, but because it's the beginning. It's the thing that's in front of us that we are going to remember And so even in those tiny small things, when Aunt so-and-so and Uncle whatever gets mad at us as we go into the holidays because they say those ridiculous things at the dinner table, you know, that we could just put back into that pile of crap, or when something happens into our life that we feel like we've been wronged, we need to wake up to the fact that there's another way of being, and that it's important that even on those tiny things that we get angry about and we react about, that there's another way for us. And it's not only a good thing for your health and well-being and to find balance and peace in your life, but it's important for the world that in every single one of those moments, we choose higher. We can spiral up or we can spiral down. And in this moment, each and every one of us are being called to spiral up. And it's, you know, my prayer is that nobody in this room ever has to deal with anything as difficult and painful as that situation. But there's enough in our world, in our individual lives that we do have to deal with that are affected like this. That we can make a choice to let those judgments go. To let the pain go and to open our hearts and to lean into the heart enough to know that there's another way. I couldn't not talk about that today because it's the opening and the possibility, and we have to take it. I often say that, you know, sometimes the barn door opens and the animals scurry out, you know, if we have an opportunity to scurry out into a new way of being, getting into that farmyard of joy, you know, that we can get out of our limitation and into the possibility of that meadow and that field. You know what? This is the barn door's opening and we need to run out of it. And we need to go into the sun and into the light and realize that there's another way. And that it starts with us. And so, how do we do this? We start by building our compassion muscles through our spiritual practice. We need to practice kindness with ourselves and with others. And so I have a couple of things for us to think about this week. And the first thing I want you to do is to be gentle with yourself. Whenever we go through something challenging, whenever we have an experience of pain and difficulty, whenever something happens at us, we think we should be able to take it. And that's when we armor up. We are not called to armor up. We're called to lean into our hearts. One of my favorite memes is a picture of a woman with her, I couldn't find it today, but there's a picture of a woman holding her heart, and the wording is something to the effect of course you feel like you do right now. It's really hard right now. Can we acknowledge that sometimes we go through hard things? And it may not be hard to the person sitting next to you. It may not seem like it's a big deal, but you know what? It's a big deal for you. And that we should acknowledge ourselves and our compassion starts with ourselves. We need to allow ourselves to be where we're at and allow our hearts to open. The other thing I love is the idea of practicing random acts of kindness, right? The idea of paying for the toll for the person behind you, buying someone a Starbucks, whatever it is, you know, where they're never going to know and they don't know you and you don't know them. There's power in that practice. It was popular a little while ago with the idea of paying it forward. But practicing random acts of kindness, what it does is it allows you to feel where your heart is without the expectation or the joy or the fun of getting the response, right? Because you don't know what that person's going to say because you're driving away from Starbucks. You're not. And by the way, I'm not there every day. I know it sounds like I am, but I don't go to Starbucks every day. It's just a good way of, it's a good example. My husband makes me great coffee every day. I don't need to go there all the time, but you know what I mean. And so when we practice random acts of kindness, when we get to be that angel for somebody else, what you get to do is feel you and God and life without the idea of it being reciprocated or the joy of having the acknowledgement for it. And the third one is this. Reverend Dr. Victoria is doing this loving kindness meditation, and she's got room just for a few people online to do it. But I'm teaching it to us today because I think it's such a powerful practice. It's the loving kindness meditation. It's also called metta. So in this, this is what it is. So when you start this practice, what you do is you think of someone you love. You bring them to mind. close your eyes and bring it to your heart, the person that you love the most, that's the easiest to do. And if you're having a hard time finding the person, do it for your pet. Because I know everybody can love their dogs, right, and their cats. So then you say, may you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease, and may you be happy. Actually, we're going to do it. Close your eyes. We'll do it for the easy one, the person that you love. Imagine them in front of you. And then you say to them, may you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. And may you be happy. The second person is you find someone that you're neutral to. Maybe it's your barista. Maybe it's someone that you kind of know, but you're neutral to them. Again, you picture them in front of you. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. And may you be happy. Then the third step, and I know I'm doing this quickly, the third step is to find the person you have a challenge with, the one you feel has wronged you, the one you feel is out to get you, the one that's hurt your heart. And it could be either someone in your life now or from 40 years ago. And you picture them in front of you. And again, from the deepest place of your heart, you say, may you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. And may you be happy. And just breathing into your heart space in that moment, I invite you to come on back. This is a salve to your soul, to your heart. It's a powerful practice. And if you can, there's different versions of this. This is the one that comes to mind when I do it. There's all the wordings are a little bit different, but due to the translations. But the idea, you get the idea of it, is that it's really easy to do this practice with someone you adore. And it's even easy to do it someone that you're neutral to. But the work is for the person that you're mad at. The work is the person that you feel has harmed you and hurt you. And what this does is it opens your heart in a place to let them go. Let them go on their own journey. Let them, acknowledging that life is there for you. And so what I know is we step into this month where we have the courage to be kind and we explore all of these different concepts, that it opens a door of possibility for us to live in a place of peace and well-being, for us to be connected in that interconnectedness of life and awake to the fact that we have a choice as to how we create our lives. Because how we act to other people is what we're calling forth to us. And that's the only way. That's the only way we can find peace of mind. That's the only way we can find peace in our heart. That's the only way that we can love our neighbors as we love ourselves and we can love our enemies, is by opening to that truth that we are part of the divine expression of love, and we've come here to express it, to give it, and to be it. And I know that for each one of us, and I know that in this month, we open to that divine being, and so it is.